offering our most loving pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Dear listeners, we welcome you to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. As always, Arvind and Prem are joining you live from our studios in Prashanthi Nilayam. And even as the summer is setting in, I think luckily we are not as, it's not as hot as probably it should be by this time of the year, because a few weeks after Shivratri is when it already starts warming up. Thanks to a few showers we had, surprise showers last week, I think we are still a few days away from the real Parthi summer. But nevertheless, thanks to Swami, we are all comfortable here in the studio. And more than being comfort physically, the joy of sitting and recollecting Swami's message week after week through these programs and talking to each one of you through these shows is a blessing that Swami has given all of us. I'm very, very grateful for that. And we're running into the sixth year doing this, the afternoon satsang. So I think it's been a fascinating journey for us of sharing, and more than sharing, learning for ourselves. And that is the journey we're continuing. It's another step today, another episode. And it's a continuation of the Bhagavat Vahini that we were doing last week. The one we did last week was very beautiful in many ways, because it was, there are many devotees who are associated with the avatar, and one of them whom we had the opportunity to speak about was a very special one, because in many ways he's very unique. And we spoke about just one episode where he is involved in, which is a contrast of two types of devotees, how each one interact with each other and one learns from the other. We're speaking about the interaction between the devotee Uddhava and the Gopikas. But today we're going to go back into the childhood of Lord Krishna. But before we do that, before we narrate and share with you some of the other stories and incidents that Swami narrates as part of this part of Bhagavat Vahini, let's invite Arvind to join all of us. Sairam Arvind.
Sairam Prem, and as you rightly put it, it's a great privilege and pleasure. I had lost track. I didn't think it's already the sixth year in running, and it's amazing. It gives a joyous feeling in the heart. And that's how it is. Whenever we do anything for Swami, with love for Swami, it feels so fulfilling, and that's what I'm feeling right now. Last week, as you said, we were discussing about the interaction between Uddhava and the Gopikas, and I think in particular towards the end, we spoke about one Gopika, which is Radha. We spoke of the paradox where her intense attachment to Krishna actually made her intensely detached from the form of Krishna. And we took that as an inspiration for our present day situation, where we pine and crave to see the beautiful form of Swami, but physically it is not there the way it was. Of course, you know, every now and then we get to hear of these amazing tales, amazing miracles where people have seen Swami physically. Even recently I was reading on the Super Speciality Hospital Prashanti Gram website. Mm-hmm. They have started a monthly magazine or a newsletter, in which there was this incident about this particular Mahendra Singh from Madhya Pradesh,
okay,
from a place called Sagar. I'm not supposed to, I think, have mentioned the name. Anyway, it's done now. So this person, he had brought another patient along with him to the hospital, and the PRO of the hospital, while speaking to this patient, asking him how he got to know about Swami, this patient told him about this other friend of his who brought him from Sagar. And so the PRO asked him, how did that friend of yours get to know Swami? He said, because Swami appeared to him there and told him to come here. And he was shocked. The PRO was shocked, and he said, oh God, let me try to find him, find this person. And when he made inquiries in Sagar, somebody who knows this person said that, no, I don't think that he saw Swami like that. It was in a dream. So, that okay, dream. Somehow though we know that a dream darshan is as real as a real darshan, we give more importance to a real darshan than a dream. A dream darshan means it's okay, anybody can get it. That was what even our PRO felt, Harsha from the hospital. But nevertheless, something within him prodded him, so he continued to look through the, you know, register to see this person, because he had his name. He wanted to see him in the hospital records, and, you know, ours is a paperless hospital, everything paperless in every sense. You know, all the records are digitized and there's no currency notes anywhere used. The only place currency notes are come to use in the hospital is possibly at the fresh and honest counter in the side if you want to buy coffee or tea. But yeah, it's a paperless hospital, and so he could easily search through the digital records. He got a telephone number, and when he called, he managed to get the son of this person, and the son actually said that, no, it was not a dream. Swami actually appeared, and then the whole story came out, because he had a conversation with the son and the father, who was formerly a patient here. It was so amazing, you know. This happened in 2013, when he got to know that he is having this cardiac problem, which will cost him a lakh or two to get operated, and he was depressed. He didn't know what to do, because he is just a tea shop owner, and he had no idea how he could even take a loan of that amount selling tea, and he was very depressed, he was sad. That is when he said that somebody came to him and said in Puttaparthi, he said that he was walking back home, and somebody came to him on a motorbike, stopped the motorbike. This is a little funny looking person, and he told him that you go to Puttaparthi, there's a Sathya Sai hospital, there you'll be treated. So with no idea of where this Puttaparthi is, what is this hospital, he traveled all the way, arrived here, and he says when he entered the ashram, he looked at Swami's picture that was there, a big one at the entrance. He asked Sevadal person, who is this person? He said, that is Sathya Sai Baba. He said, where does he stay in Sagar? Because, you know, this person came to me on the motorbike and told, you know, that was when all the revelations took place, and that single revelation by the Sevadal that this is not a person with a residence in Sagar in Madhya Pradesh, but Prashanti Nilaya Nivasa, you know, we call him, but he is the Nivasa of the whole universe. And that is what thrilled that person. He has become a devotee, he's a regular Sevadal. He has also got other people from his district to come and get operated in our hospital. So, as I said, you know, Swami still appears in his physical form to many people, and somehow he seems to appear only for the new people. But anyway, coming back to the point I was making, for most of us who struggle to see him in flesh and blood, I think the inspiration that we get from Radha is very amazing, because Radha was a case of extreme attachment to the form of Krishna, which actually led to absolute dispassionate detachment from that very form.
Very true. Many ways you look at it. Of course, it's always fascinating to have the physical form around, and but the truth is, I mean, if not for the Aradhana Mahotsav, which is coming, which is 24th of April, there would have been some other day when it had to happen. If not the way it happened, there would have been some other way it would have happened, but it had to happen. And I think that is the reality you cannot get over with. And Swami would say that, especially towards the last few years, 2010-11, Swami would make references. He would speak about the passing away of Shirdi Baba. I think one of the discourses he spoke about that.
During Dasara, right? Yes.
And one of the discourses Swami spoke about, how even Krishna had to withdraw his form. So Swami was saying that, you know, it is an eventuality. Just because God comes in a human form, because it is God, it does not mean that the human form will not perish. And that was the strongest message Swami was sending that, you know, you have to let go of the body, your own and the one that you've really come to love. And the truth is, I mean, every other person that you might get attached to, there is no way of getting them after that. There is no way you can make them yours after the period there the body has perished, in that sense. But the opportunity with Swami is just the reverse. The opportunity to actually get him is much, much more when the body is removed, because your focus turns. It's not that, as some people would put it in a wrong way, saying that now Swami has become universal. Swami was always universal, but because we were focused on that physical body, we could not look elsewhere. Mm. But now that Swami is, for many of us, after a certain point, it becomes like a distraction, that you're not able to see Swami beyond that physical body. For us, I think, as you were saying, you know, Mother Radha is a great inspiration, because she showed that it can be achieved. It can be achieved even when the avatar is dead. forget about the avatar, moving on, and then you're forced to develop that. She says that is the reality that has to be developed, and that is what completes the love altogether. You know, it's not about now I'm hopeless and I have no other opportunity. I have to go and look at this. It's the completion of the journey too.
Perfectly put. And because of that, what Radharani has become, if we go to Vrindavan, Mathura Vrindavan, everywhere it is Radhe Radhe, everybody chants the name of Radhe as though they are chanting the name of Krishna. That is what has happened. Very, very interesting. And this thing happening about Radha becoming so prominent, it might be said that people have developed it like a tradition, custom, but I feel it is there in the vibration itself. Very recently, as recently as 2 days back, I was playing a little game with my daughter and she's begun to speak. So therefore, I was teaching her different names, different people's names, and I was telling her the full names, So my full name is not, my name is Arvind, my full name is Arvind Balasubramanya, this way. And teaching everybody, all her grandfather, grandparents, her name and full name. The next day when we were in the altar, she suddenly asked me, okay, so this is Saraswati. So what is Saraswati's full name? going by our Indian tradition, I said that is Saraswati Brahma, because Brahma is her husband, right? So then what is Lakshmi's full name? I said Lakshmi Vishnu. Okay, so she went on like this, asking each of the gods whom I had named their full name. So Ganesha, I said it is Ganesha Shiva, because Ganesha, he takes on his father's name. Amazingly, Prem, when she came to the idol of Krishna, she said, his full name I know. And I said, what's his full name? She said, it is Krishna Radhe, Radhe Krishna. And I was simply stunned, because this was not something that has been taught. And I feel this is very significant, because it is in the air, it is in the vibration, it is there in the consciousness. There is that famous song which goes, Radha ke bina sham adha, which means without Radha, Krishna is half. Because it is Radha who completes Krishna. Very often, we are convinced that it is the Lord who completes the devotee. But here is the case of a devotee who has risen to that level through her own sadhana, that the Lord is completed by her. That is the significance of Radharani, or Mother Radha as we call. And that's why I feel it's not just about teaching and the stories that have been handed down. It is somewhere in the air that a 2-year-old child is able to say that, Krishna's full name is Radha Krishna or Krishna Radha. And that's how it is. Swami also, in one discourse, I remember mentioning that he would say, always Radha's name is taken before. We have many people with the name Radha Krishna. I don't think there's anybody with the name Krishna Radha. It's always Radha Krishna. That is how Radha has become. And dear listeners, we feel that there is this beautiful song that has been made in our Radio Sai studios. It was made in celebration of this divine love between Lord Krishna and Mother Radha, and it has among the different vocalists Swami himself. So that's the beauty of this song. We hope you enjoy this song. On the other side of this song, we will continue with our discussion on Lord Krishna's childhood.
The incessant flow of worship to Krishna was Radha's very life. In thoughts of Krishna, she was forever lost. His form danced before her eyes every moment, wakeful and dream. The blue hues of the gurgling Yamuna reminded her of Krishna's charming complexion. The merry chirping of birds stirred in her memories of Krishna's mischievous chuckles. In Vrindavan, when Krishna would play upon his flute, her days passed like moments, filling every moment with that memory. She spent her days. All that stood between Krishna and Radha's union was her mortal frame. The day finally came when even that would seamlessly slip away.
ఒక్క కోరిక కోరింది పాపంకు రాధా.
రాధా హ్యాడ్ వన్ డిజైర్.
నాకింకేమి వద్దు స్వామి.
ఐ డోంట్ వాంట్ ఎనీథింగ్ మోర్ స్వామి.
నీ మురళిని ఒక్కతూరి వాయించండి, నేను వింటాను చాలు.
ఐ వాంట్ టు లిసన్ టు యువర్ ఫ్లూట్.
పాట పాడు మా కృష్ణ పరుకుతే నెలకొన్నట్టు.
యు సింగ్ ద గ్లోరీ అండ్ ద మెలడీ సో దట్ అవర్ హార్ట్స్ ఆర్ ఫుల్.
పాట పాడు మా కృష్ణ పలుకుతే
పాట పాడేటప్పటికి వినింది.
షీ హర్డ్
ప్రాణం విడిచింది.
షీ బ్రీథ్ హర్ లాస్ట్.
ప్రాణం విడిచడమే కాకుండా ఆనాటి నుంచి కూడా మురళిని పట్టడం కూడా మానివేశాడు.
సిన్స్ దెన్ కృష్ణ డిడ్ నాట్ పికప్ దట్ ఫ్లూట్ అగైన్.
రాధాకు ఈ యొక్క మురళిని త్యాగం చేశాడు.
హి సాక్రిఫైస్డ్ దిస్ ఫ్లూట్ ఫర్ హర్.
ఆ గానంను త్యాగం చేశాడు.
అండ్ దెన్ ద మెలడీ టు
నట్ట కడపటి పాట కృష్ణుడు ఇది ఒక్కటే చెప్పింది.
ఇన్ ఫ్యాక్ట్ దిస్ వాస్ ద లాస్ట్ సాంగ్ ఆఫ్ కృష్ణ.
రాధ చాలా గొప్ప భక్తురాలు.
రాధ ఇస్ ఎన్ ఆర్డెంట్ డివోటీ.
కనుకనే భక్తికి అంత గొప్ప విలువనిచ్చారు.
డివోషన్ ఇస్ హైలీ వాల్యుబుల్.
ఇట్టి భక్తిని ఆనాటి నుంచి గోపికలు జగత్తును వ్యాప్తి గావించేటట్టుగా అనేక ప్రచార ప్రపంచములు చేస్తూ వచ్చారు.
దిస్ ప్రిన్సిపల్ ఆఫ్ డివోషన్ హ్యాస్ బీన్ టాట్ అండ్ షేర్డ్ అండ్ ప్రొపగేటెడ్ బై దిస్ గోపికాస్.
you don't feel like speaking anything after that. So beautiful, so wonderful, and you know, that is what I feel is the amazing thing. Not only did Mother Radha win the heart of Krishna and make Krishna pine for her, we can see that pining and yearning that is there even in Swami's voice. Really, how true it is when Swami says that you think that the devotee is in search of the Lord. The Lord actually is in search of a true devotee.
Sometime back, I was just going through a discourse, very interesting discourse, where, you know, I think in general, Swami was talking to, it was a Buddha Purnima discourse or something like that, where Swami was addressing all the delegates who had come from many countries.
Mm-hmm.
In the course of that, Swami was saying something which was, I mean, the way Swami was saying it was so beautiful. He said, "Do you all realize how fortunate you are to be here?" He said, "This land of Prashantinilayam is filled with the vibrations created by devotees and their love for Swami."
Mm-hmm.
And he said, okay, so many devotees have lived in this land. And Swami is saying that they've lived full lives. They've discarded their, you know, they've spent their last moments thinking of Swami. And, you know, with Swami saying that you've come here, absorb these vibrations, let go of all your negative thoughts, let go of all your, you know, worries and pains and everything.
He didn't say that this is the land of the avatar, right. Absorb the vibrations.
Right, Swami wasn't saying that. Swami was saying that this land is filled because of the love and devotion of so many of these people. I think, you know, that's the opportunity an avatar gives. If you look at Radha, if you look at her love, I think that same opportunity was there for everybody who was there when Krishna was there, right? When an avatar comes and physically lives, that opportunity was given to many, but not many really use it, and those who use it become an inspiration for ages to come. And to come to Swami, and, you know, if you've been worshipping God as a picture in our, as Swami would say, you know, you've been worshipping, you made God a picture in your house. After coming and living with an avatar, if still God is only a picture, then I think you're missing out something so much more than, you know, it can be described in words.
Absolutely. I mean, God should become a living presence, a living omnipresence. Though unseen, you always know that He is there. And that was the kind of feeling even little Krishna aroused in his parents to start off with. Because as a baby, so charming, so beautiful, so luminous, so attractive, as we discussed, the name itself means that. Everybody who saw the child fell instantly in love with the child, and it was almost like a problem for Mother Yashoda and Nanda when this infant became a toddler and began to, you know, crawl around the house. Whenever Krishna steps out beyond the threshold of the house and goes out, it's like, oh my God. They would, exactly as we were speaking, this living presence. Krishna is physically not in the house, but every little part of the house would remind them of what Krishna would do, you know, and that's why they would miss the baby so much. They would run and get him in, but Krishna, who can actually hold back the Lord? Who can restrict and confine the Lord? So Krishna would toddle away even at that young age. He would go outside the house. And in fact, as we discussed many satsangs before, at this age, he has taken on many asuras and vanquished them, Putana and that, I forget the name, that asura in the form of the cart, the toy cart.
Right.
Yeah, so all these asuras, different ones, he has gone and annihilated. In spite of that, you know, so charming, so sweet, so cute, and such a bundle of joy he was, that in spite of having witnessed all these miracles and all these glorious things, the mother and father would long to keep him safe at home and cuddle him and ensure that he's at home all the time, because the home gets light. Little did they realize at that time possibly that this was the light that had come to light up the entire world. So you can't restrict and hold him back at home. Just like, you know, Swami officially said that and made a declaration. He said that my devotees are calling me, I have to go. Possibly as an infant, Krishna didn't tell that, but it was the same principle, the same call of love that Krishna was responding to even as a toddler.
And there's one very sweet incident which Bhagavatam narrates.
Mm-hmm.
Swami does not put it in the Bhagavatvani, but Swami has of course spoken about it, I think, elsewhere, where when Krishna is a little baby, one lady comes selling fruits. I think it's a very beautiful and very profound incident. Very graphically, it sends across a beautiful message. Where this lady comes and, she actually stops at the house of Nanda to just take rest. Because it's a hot day, she's carrying this whole basket of fruits. So she just puts her things down and she leans against the wall and she rests there. And Krishna comes and, the Bhagavatam would say that that purity is there only in children. The idea of property is not there. This belongs to you and with that belongs to me is not there. They see something they wanted, they ask for it. Right? There's no question of, this belongs to the neighbor, I can't take it, or this is in the shop, I need to pay something for it. So Krishna comes out and he's a toddler, he's hardly able to walk, he's about 2 or 3 years old, they say, and comes to this lady and he points out to a fruit and he says, I want that fruit. So looking at Krishna, she is enchanted. She says, my God, I've never seen a child. It's not beauty, it's something else. So then she looks at Krishna and says, you take whatever you want. Right? And then, after he takes, she says, but what will you pay me? Very playfully she asks, what will you pay me? So Krishna asks, what is paying? What is the idea of paying? So then the lady explains that, I'm a seller. I go from street to street selling these fruits. So whoever buys from me will give something in return. There was no money that time. There used to be a kind of barter, right? So you say they either give me some grains or they give me some lentils or some curd or whatever it is. So then Krishna said, okay, then wait, I'll get you some rice. So he goes into the house and, with his little hands, he just picks up a handful of grains and he walks all the way from the granary inside the house to the doorstep to give, this handful of grains to the lady. And by the time he comes, there's only, hardly a few grains
all
left
would have dropped on the way.
Little hands. And, this lady is so enchanted by this little act of Krishna. She says, this is more than what I can earn all my lifetime, and she takes it. And just like how later Rabindranath Tagore writes in that beautiful poem, she actually sees in the end of the day, whatever little that Krishna has given, it becomes gold and precious gems. Right? And, this is one of the stories, and there's the other aspect of Lord Krishna, of course, we've spoken about it earlier also, of him stealing butter and curds. There's another beautiful twist that Swami gives, maybe we'll come to that at that point. But these were the kind of things which Krishna was doing. We know that in Bhagavatamaini, in our satsang jital, we have crossed this part, we have come through a lot of things. But again, we're going back to it, because even in the narration between Sukha Maharishi and Parikshit, I think it's like that. It's a little back and forth, because Parikshit is every now and then going back to Krishna's childhood days and he's asking the sage to narrate more incidents from there.
I don't know if this part is in the Bhagavatam, because I must confess that I have not read the Bhagavatam. The only Bhagavatam I have read is the Bhagavata Vahini. But in the Bhagavata Vahini, Swami gives a very nice and detailed schedule that the little boy Krishna followed. So Swami says that his daily schedule would begin right early in the morning in the Brahma Muhurtam, that is 4 a.m. Krishna would get up and quickly have his wash and get ready and then go to the cow shed to select the cows that he will be taking for grazing. It becomes evident that not every day all the cows go for grazing. It's by turns. So it's like possibly like a vacation or a day off or whatever like that. So the cows that have to be taken that day are selected. And for the other cows, Krishna gets fodder and grass and puts it so that they can eat in the shed itself. Then unties all these cows, takes them to the road, to the street, makes them stand there. And Swami said he would use a kind of a whistle to send out a signal to all the other cowherd boys telling that he is ready. So even before the break of dawn, Krishna is ready with his cows, and hearing his signal, all the other Gopalas also would come, and that's why possibly they would be getting up early also. Otherwise, children, they find it very tough to get up early. It is only this kind of love for God that can make you get up early. I don't know if that was the case with us, Prem, when we used to be woken up for Suprabhatam. Whether it was love for God or whether it was the fear of the warden, I don't know. But anyway, love for God definitely is a strong motivator. And that was the case with these Gopalas. They would get up and come to the street with their cows. And that was how this happy crowd of Go and Gopala, all of them would walk with a spring in their step towards the pasture grounds. And again, Swami has beautifully described their walk also. You know, Swami has written that this little boy Krishna, let's remember that he was hardly 6, 7, or 8 years of age maybe, because what was his age when he killed Kamsa? He was quite young, right?
I mean, yeah, I think around 10 or
10 or 11, 10, yeah, right. Just into his tweens maybe. So this was such a young age, and therefore the cows are huge actually compared to his size. So Krishna would often dangle from the necks of the cows, and the cows would enjoy that Krishna dangling. All other Gopalas would often lie on their backs on the back of the cow, you know, gazing at the sky. Happily they would walk. And interestingly, Swami revealed that Krishna would sing. I never knew that Krishna was a singer. I thought he was only an instrumentalist. Okay, I thought he used to only play the flute. But Krishna would sing, and Swami has described how he would sing also. He would cover one of his ears with one of his hands and sing. And if we see all these professional singers, this is what they do. Because when you actually cover your ear, you're able to hear yourself perfectly. The audio from your vocal cords are heard internally by your ears. They don't have to come out and, you know, get scattered or get dispersed and the frequencies change. So in order to maintain the perfect pitch, most singers, they actually close one ear and they sing. And that's how Krishna would sing, Swami has written. And as Krishna sang, all the cows would get intoxicated in divine love. So it was like the same between the Gopalas and the cows. The only difference was that, as Swami would say once when he came out in Trai Vrindavan, that time it was the bungalow days, I think, in Vrindavan, when the bungalow was there, there was a enclosure where all the deer would be kept. Those deer have now been shifted to the region next to Chaitanya Jyoti Museum. But when Swami came out, those were the days when the boys would help in taking care of the deer. So on one side there were these deer, and on the other side there were these boys. Swami came and said, here I have 4-legged deer and here 2-legged deers. You know, both are dear to him and both love him. And that is the case with Krishna also there, that I think the Gopalas were his 2-legged deers and the cows were his 4-legged deers. Both were very endearing for him and both loved him so much. And it was in this kind of joy of divine love that all the cows and the Gopalas would set out along with Krishna to the pasture grounds.
And if you look at it, we spoke of so many stories of the asuras coming, and you know, the asuras came in so many forms, one like a crane, one like a bull, one like a
horse,
calf and a horse and all of that. It's not quite beyond us to understand that maybe even these cows were also people who had taken those forms to enjoy this proximity. I mean, when asuras can take the form of cows to come and attack Krishna, it's not, it wouldn't be surprising if
noble
were,
people
right? They're all noble sages and saints who took this opportunity to be born as these cows, to be near Krishna for that, you know, that period. Because the way Swami describes it, oftentimes when Swami is talking about human nature, Swami would say, and don't behave like an animal, be a human being. And one of the things that Swami would say is, you know, the animals are always attracted only to the few pleasures of life, of eating, of procreating, and or sleeping. So Swami says that when these cows would go around grazing, one of the reasons why Krishna used to sing is to call their attention when they have to start going back towards their home. And Swami says that when Krishna would sing out aloud, they would be eating, they would stop eating, and they would get entranced by the music that was coming, the melody that was coming from Krishna, and they would turn away. And apart from that, the way Swami describes the attire that Krishna was wearing, I think that's very beautiful, because, you know, as Swami himself would say, we are all spoiled by artists like Ravi Varma, who, and of course in the later years, the Italian artists who have also portrayed Krishna with all the jewels and, you know, the pearls wearing. But Swami says that he actually was a simple cowherd boy who was wearing simple clothes. And obviously he's not going to be wearing all those crowns and golden jewelry when he's going out to, right, taking the cows for grazing. And in fact, there's a beautiful incident where Swami actually showed how Krishna was dressed. And I think this happened in Vrindavan in the year 1977.
Exactly. Right? You know, interestingly, what happened was I have very fond memories with this episode because it came as an inspiration for us. This was in the year 2004 when we thought we should prepare a program for Krishna Janmashtami. But because Krishna Janmashtami was coming right before the, you know, those continuous internal evaluation exams, so there was hardly any time for preparation, and therefore many of the students, many of our classmates whom we approached for being part of this program, they were saying that, can we be excused for this one program because we want to prepare for the exams. So at that time, you know, we were thinking whether we should go ahead with this program or not, whether we should skip this time and plan for some other program. That is when some interesting, in quotes, coincidences happened that thrilled us. For instance, when we were discussing what should be the program about, somebody came with the idea, why not make it a program on the inner significance of everything that happened in Krishna's life. For instance, when Krishna was born, the chains that held Vasudeva's arms, that locked, they fell off. And when he dropped Krishna there in Gokula and came back, the chains came back again. And this can be interpreted as when we bring God into our life, we are liberated. When we let go of God, we are again into bondage. You know, in this manner, we interpreted the different episodes that happens in Krishna's life. We sat interpreting it and we felt very thrilled. We thought it was nice. And that is when we came across this photograph of Swami tying a towel to his head. Mm-hmm. Okay. So we thought if we can bring this incident also as part of our narration, because this is associating Swami and Krishna. Now, we had not yet got permission for putting up the program, not from Swami, I mean from our warden. First, we had to convince the warden that the program was good enough. So, the warden had his doubts because he knew that there are very few days left and not many boys are participating. So, when we went to him, we said, sir, we are planning a program in this manner. But with this, we also would like to narrate this incident of how Swami tied this towel to his head and showed like how Krishna would tie. Sir, do you have any idea from where we can get the incident? You know, this thrilled the warden so much because you know what? He made a revelation. He said, I don't know why you are talking of this incident, but I was there when that incident happened. I said, oh, wow, sir. Then can you narrate what happened? He said, you know what? Actually, the towel was also mine. You know, and when he said that, we were so thrilled. And he went on to narrate how Swami was talking about Krishna. It was possibly the day of Krishnashtami or one day before, I'm not remembering now.
What happened was, I think Swami was not in Vrindavan during that time. And of course,
during Krishnashtami, yes.
I heard the story from Ravikma sir, and his part of the story was, he actually spoke on Janmashtami day. Because okay. Swami was not there. They had an unofficial celebration that, and everybody was really upset that Swami was not there. So Ravikma sir spoke, and I think he said, you know, what are we celebrating? You know, our Krishna is not here, and what is there to celebrate? Mm. Something to that regard he actually spoke of.
Okay.
And the next day Swami actually came to Vrindavan.
And the next day he...
Right. And then Swami said, oh, I miss Janmashtami here. So Swami said, so what? I am here now. Let's celebrate it this evening.
And that is
that
why
is how that happened. Right?
And there Swami said, you know, Krishna would actually tie a piece of cloth to his head, and he asked for somebody to get a piece of cloth. That is when the warden Shivshankar Sai, who was a student that time, he ran up to his room and got his towel, white towel, right, which Swami is tying to his head. Now see the interesting thing, Prem. This is what happened. And as you said, this discourse was not on Krishna Janmashtami. It was the day after Krishna Janmashtami. So once we had the warden on our side, we thought, okay, wow, now let us really sincerely prepare, because it looks like Swami wants us to put up the program. So we went to the library, and at that time, you know, it was not as if we had easy access to the internet, and even if we had access to the internet in 2004, there was hardly anything that was available
online
about Swami. So we went to a book which was called a compendium of you know, Swami's teachings, and from different discourses it has been collected. There, just imagine, we open a page on Krishna, and there Swami is narrating the significance of Krishna's birth. And it is exactly the same thing that he inspired in the hearts of different people when we were discussing there. It was exactly this. Swami is himself narrating that When you pick up the Lord, when the Lord comes into your life, you get liberated. If you let go of the Lord, you get stuck in bondage. We were so thrilled that what was born as an inspired thought is actually a part of a discourse. You know, definitely Swami's discourse is much older than our thought, but without having read that discourse, when we got this thought, we were so inspired. That was like more prodding. But the coincidence didn't stop there. We tried to locate which is that discourse. And that year in 2004, Krishna Janmashtami fell on the 6th of September.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed that that discourse was on the 6th of September. And we were so thrilled because we were thinking that it can't get more coincidental mm-hmm. than this, the same date. And that year when we went and we saw, Krishna Janmashtami was not the 6th of September. It was on the 5th of September. And can you believe it, Prem? That discourse happens to be the same one in which Swami delivered at the Vrindavan, in which, you know, this warden of ours had to give the towel, you know, for Swami to wear. And that beautiful photograph is there, mm-hmm. Swami wearing. So it was multiple coincidences. And actually on that day, indeed the program happened. Swami came dressed in the Pitambara, in the yellow dress, which was a pleasant surprise, a thrill for all of us as we put up the program. Swami blessed us with namaskar, blessed us with the opportunity. It was so beautiful. And, you know, looking back, we all of us, I'm sure, feel very grateful to Swami that He prodded us through inspiration and through all these ways. Otherwise, a memory of a lifetime would have been lost had we prepared for some drab exam, you know, which matters nothing to us now, instead of creating this beautiful memory which is so dear and close to our heart. I feel just like how the Gopalas would have cherished the memory, we are cherishing that memory of that Krishnashtami in 2004. So yes, that is the association. I mean, I remember with this beautiful photograph, because that photograph is available online. It is there at Radio Sai, in the Radio Sai site also. Swami beaming with joy as He is tying the cloth to His head. And the warden told that day that after tying that cloth to His head, the towel to His head, Swami said that while walking, Krishna saw a feather of a peacock that was lying on the floor. So He just picked it up and put it. You know, it was not like an elaborate ceremony or some, in that sense, something of great significance, inner significance and meaning and all that. As He was just walking, Gokula was a land. It was like a wild forest land, and definitely there would have been many peacocks. He just liked it and He put it in His head. And that is what Swami narrated as He planted His own finger in His thick bushy hair. So that is the photograph. And here also Swami narrates in the Bhagavata Vahini that that is how Krishna would dress, with a simple dhoti that He would tie and a cloth tied to His head. I think Krishna would be bare body on the upper body, and that is how all the Gopalas too would be. So with a turban and a dhoti, a waist cloth in which He would keep His flute, they would go out to the pastures.
And then Swami also describes that scene of, you know, looking at Krishna amongst the other, I mean, the cows and the calves. Swami would say they were all white, and, you know, the beauty of His dark complexion contrasted against the white cattle was itself a beautiful sight. And, I mean, sometimes when you look at some of these videos of Swami, either Swami is walking in the portico with boys, you know, sitting on the veranda, or even Swami is, you know, walking around during those days when there were sands, or in old Vrindavan days. One thing which always strikes you is, you know, Swami has so much time. You know, it's you and me who are all the time running, and we say, no, we don't have time for bhajans, we don't have time to do this contemplation, we don't have time to chant this mantra, no, we don't have time to come to Parthi. God comes down in a human form and He has so much time. You know, you imagine the scene where Krishna is running around every day. This was His schedule, Swami says, that it looked like when God comes as a human in a human form, He has so much time for us, but we don't seem to have enough time for Him. But that scene which Swami describes is so very beautiful, that they would pack their lunch, and Swami would say the lunch again was very, very simple. Cold rice, which was made the previous day with curds, and Swami would say they would carry some pickles for taste. And after they let the cows have their lunch, they would settle down for their own lunch. And that scene again was beautiful, is very beautifully described by Swami. And Swami would say each one would eat their own food, but Krishna would go around giving a morsel from His own lunch to each one of them, and grabbing from their plates the morsel for Himself.
And when Krishna would come seeking food from different plates, you know, in India we have this tradition that we don't offer to the Lord something that we have already started eating, because we feel that the sanctity of the food is gone, because food has to be first offered to God. There is a concept, I don't know what they call it in South Indian languages, being a South Indian myself, but in North Indian languages they call it Juta. Juta food means it is a food that has been touched by the saliva of a person, so you can't actually give it to somebody else. So they would be hesitating, but Krishna, you know, it's almost like as if like a flashback of his previous avatar, Rama, where he ate those fruits that Shabari offered after tasting them, because she wanted to give only the sweet ones to Rama. In that manner, Krishna also, you know, he just tells them, no. And that is the kind of bonding that they had, that Krishna would pick from their plates and eat. And even a pickle that has been half eaten, Krishna would take and relish it. And the kind of relish that Krishna showed would thrill the hearts of all the Gopalas, and they would actually receive prasadam, unaware that they are receiving prasadam. They would receive prasadam from Krishna, because as you said, from his own packet and bundle he would distribute the food. But basically this was a very carefree atmosphere where each one would share, and this would happen as soon as they reached this place, the pasture, after which, you know, they would either play or Krishna would play the flute. In fact, Swami writes that when Krishna played the flute, even the calves would stop suckling at their mothers, because so entrancing it would be, so beautiful it would be. So that is what would happen. And Swami also writes about the different games they play. But I think before going into the games that these Gopalas played with Krishna, before describing those sweet games, we'll take a quick little break. On the other side of the break, we'll continue where we left off.
वो काला एक बांसुरी वाला बांसुरी वाला वो काला एक बांसुरी वाला वो काला एक बांसुरी वाला सुध बिसरा गया मोरी रे सुध बिसरा गया मोरी माखन चोर जो नंद किशोर वो माखन चोर जो नंद किशोर वो कर गयो मन की चोरी रे सुध बिसरा गया मोरी वो काला एक बांसुरी वाला पन घट पे मोरी बैया मरोड़ी मैं बोली तो मेरी मटकी फोरी पन घट पे मोरी बैया मरोड़ी मैं बोली तो मेरी मटकी फोरी पैया परू करू विनती मैं पर पैया परू करू विनती मैं पर माने न एक वो मोरी रे सुध बिसरा गया मोरी वो काला एक बांसुरी वाला छुप गयो फिर एक तान सुना के कहा गयो एक बाण चला के छुप गयो फिर एक तान सुना के कहा गयो एक बाण चला के गोकुल ढूंढा मैंने मथुरा ढूंढी गोकुल ढूंढा मैंने मथुरा ढूंढी कोई डगरिया न छोड़ी रे सुध बिसरा गया मोरी वो काला एक बांसुरी वाला सुध बिसरा गया मोरी रे सुध बिसरा गया मोरी माखन चोर जो नंद किशोर वो माखन चोर जो नंद किशोर वो कर गयो मन की चोरी रे सुध बिसरा गया मोरी वो काला एक बांसुरी वाला
Welcome back, dear listeners. We were talking about the scenes that Swami beautifully describes when Krishna would go out with his friends. And I think that that's probably a very beautiful song to go with that description. I don't know, is that a Meera Bhajan or Bhajan by Surdas?
I think this is a Meera Bhajan, yes. I think.
And very beautifully, you know, the first few lines of that bhajan says that he is a dark complexion flute player. And he has stolen, I mean, he has unsettled my consciousness. That's what the first line means. You know, he's made me mad. That's what it is. And so very beautiful. Because the way Swami describes, he says, it's not only the Gopalas and Gopis who were mad after Krishna. The cattle were so enchanted by him. And we know that even the Asuras came. Even Potana was not able to...
Putana.
Right, Putana. I'm sorry. Putana is the poet. Even Putana was attracted by his looks. And every time we've spoken about this part of... or this aspect of Krishna, we've always not been able to resist talk about Swami. And I think even the last time we went into a short description of how people who first time saw Swami were so very enchanted by Swami's looks. It's more than just, you know,
physical looks.
There's something more than, in fact, I don't know if it's the same discourse where Swami gave in that hostel I think this was in the discourse that Swami gave on the shores of Dwarka when Swami materialized that Krishna statue. And, you know, it's almost a 1 feet.
1 foot high.
Right, 1 foot high.
Golden
statue. I think during that discourse, Swami...
Gold statue, right? It was completely gold.
Of course, it's a long story, whether it's a gold or any other thing.
Oh, okay. Huh.
It's got it's a beautiful story by itself. I think we must have narrated that incident where Swami materialized that statue and immediately...
The archaeological...
Right, not the archaeological, I think archaeological was the first one. The ASI, Archaeological Society of India.
Survey of India.
They landed up in Rajmata's bungalow saying that we heard that Sai Baba is unearthed some statue and from Dwarka there too. So we've come to have a look at it. So then they examine the statue and then they say that, you know, it's a very recent one. It's not because they have a certain way of ascertaining the, era from which a particular statue comes from.
Dating.
Right. It's not dating of the material, but of the style, actually.
Okay.
The way the eyes are sculpted, the way the legs are sculpted.
Okay.
You know, they have a style sheet, literally, if you could call that. And they'll say that which era it comes from. So when they did a study like that, they found that that particular statue had features of all the eras of, you know, so many hundreds of years. So they said it must be a recent one.
A remix,
something like a recent thing. It's not anything historical about it, and they give it back. Then after that, the endowments land up. They said, we heard it's a gold statue, which is, you know, 1 foot long. So it belongs to the government. So when they did all the testing, and I think they did it for 2 or 3 days, at the end of it, they gave it back to Swami and they gave it back to Rajmata. Rajmata was very, very upset that the government was trying to take away something which Swami has given her. And Mr. Indrishwar was narrating of how she got so upset that she started gathering the army which was disbanded. She said, if I have to fight to retain the statue, I'll do that. You know, that's how forceful she had become. And all the while Swami was staying in the palace, Swami said, don't worry, they will look at it, they will study it, and they'll give it back to you, don't worry. So when these people had come, the endowments people, they came and they looked at the statue. They gave it back to her and they said, no, it's not gold, so you can keep it. So Swami was informed about this. Swami said, no, but then ask them what it is. And if it is not gold, you should find out what material it is. So she called the officers again and she said, so tell me what metal it is. So they became very red-faced and a bit embarrassed manner. They said, we're not able to make out. So they give it back to her, and then, of course, Rajmata used to say that when they called the royal jeweler and asked him to look at it, he said, it's 100% gold. In fact, it's a percentage of gold which is generally not used in jewelry and, you know, idols like this.
Wow.
So, of course, is that gold or is it not gold? We don't know. But when Swami materialized that statue, the discourse which Swami gave, Swami said that, you know, the many times the artists and the sculptors who make images of Krishna, they don't get the actual beauty of Krishna because they make him appear very feminine. Krishna was not feminine, but it was a different kind of masculine beauty, when Swami was saying. And it was so true, you know, when Swami was saying that, that's so precisely what we feel like when we see Swami.
Correct.
There is no feminine beauty in Swami, but there is femininity too. You know, when the way Swami would walk, some of the gestures which Swami would do was so, you know, mother-like, if we could put it that way. But at the same time, it's not feminine beauty. There was majesty and there was a kind of royalty in Swami's presence. And right, so that was Krishna's childhood where, you know, he was attracting all of these people, and not attracting merely physically, but had become the focus of that entire village in that manner.
One aspect that we promised we will narrate before we took that break was about the games that Krishna would play. Once again, it reminds us of all the games that Swami would play. It appears as though there is a limitation on the number of games that the avatars can select to play, because it's the same kind of games that they play. Krishna also, you know, when they finished having their food and the cattle are grazing, they would engage in climbing the trees. And they would play a kind of a police and thief game where you have to escape onto the trees, and those children who are the kotwals or who are supposed to be the police, you know, whatever is the equivalent word at that time, they would be trying to catch. And when Krishna was the thief, he would climb up to the topmost branches of the trees, which Swami writes as those thin little branches on which even squirrels will not tread, because they're so delicate that they can break. But Krishna would go off onto them, to the topmost branches, and they would be unable to catch because nobody can come there. And Swami writes so beautifully that Krishna can never be caught in the external sense. Krishna can only be captured by a heart filled with love, that's all. So Krishna would always be successful. No wonder he is called the Chitta Chora. You know, he's Chora actually means thief. And he would be the perfect thief when they play the game of this police and thief. And it reminds one of how Swami would tell his mates, playmates, that let's race up to the top of the hill where Kalpavriksha is, and on your mark, get set, go. Even as they start running halfway up the hill, Swami is already seated on the top of the tree there, and he's waving out to them. They come and they are, you know, again saying the same thing in a different manner, that we can never catch up with you, you are always way ahead of us. And then Swami would lovingly pluck different fruits from that Kalpavriksha and give it to these playmates of his. So in the same way, this was one game, climbing trees. The other Swami writes of is how, you know, all these cowards would have a stick in their hand. They would use this stick actually to goad and guide the cattle in the direction that they have to go. Otherwise, the cattle will just walk in all directions. So this stick, they would often turn, you know, it possibly started as a unconscious thing, but it happens, you know. I remember how when we would write in notebooks in our class, when the teacher is telling something and we don't have to take notes immediately, that time we would unconsciously start turning the pen on our fingers, you know.
Right.
In the same way, I think these coward boys also would turn the stick in their hand. And Krishna was adept at it. He would turn it so fast. And again, Swami writes, what is so surprising in that? Because he is the one who turns his entire cosmos on his fingers. That is what is supposed to be the significance of the Sudarshana Chakra. The entire universe revolves around him. It rotates around him, and we know at what speed the earth, the solar system, the galaxies, they all turn. They move at such amazing speeds. And Swami writes that for the one who turns all these at such speeds, what is so difficult about turning a stick at high speed? So Krishna would again be the best in that, and all the other Gopalas would try to learn the technique of turning the stick very fast in his hand, and Krishna would delight in teaching them that. And of course, another thing that Krishna would often do, which reminds us so much of Swami, is how he would disguise himself as different people. That the cowards, the Gopalas will think, where is Krishna? Krishna is gone. And he would suddenly pop up there as an old lady, as a young lady, as different things. And, you know, laugh at the Gopalas telling that you didn't identify me, right? You thought I was a Gopika, you thought I was a this, you thought I was a seller. So Krishna would disguise himself in different ways and come amid the Gopalas. And when they're searching for him, he would laugh out aloud telling that you didn't recognize me.
You know, when I was reading this part of Swami telling about these stories and all that, I think there's a very beautiful message in that, in the sense that whatever Krishna did, you know, he was doing the same things which the other Gopalas and Gopis were doing. You know, like that thing which Swami described of him rotating the stick in his hand or climbing the trees.
Mm.
In everything, he stood out as in, he excelled in all that he did. And I think that is what God does, actually. If you look at the abilities of God, I mean, it's beyond a comprehension. You know, that's what the Vedas say, that you can't even begin to understand what God can do. That is, I mean, it's beyond the abilities of the small mind. But when God comes as an avatar, he does what you and I do, but does it 100 times, 1,000 times better.
Sweeter.
And then you look at it and say, oh my God, that's a miracle.
Mm.
In fact, the idea of God's miracle, I think, will be much, much larger than what we can even comprehend. But I think even his miracles are toned down. When Swami says that he would climb trees, but he would climb the fastest. You know, he would go to the, I mean, he would sit on a branch, but he'll sit on a branch which would probably otherwise will not be able to hold
his weight.
A weight of a boy of that
boy,
age.
Huh? Hmm.
And the children around would look at him and say, oh, Krishna is special. I think that is what God does when he comes as an avatar. You know, I think that also is a case where we kind of end up comparing Swami with others and saying that, oh, you know, so-and-so can also read minds, or this guru can also do this. I mean, he's doing some things which is like literally 1,000 times, 1,000,000 times toned down from what he can actually do, so that we can relate to it. Otherwise, you look at it, the whole world is actually Swami's miracle, but we don't take any notice of that. But when he comes and does things which you and I can do, but does it in a manner which you and I can probably not do it, then we say, oh, that's a miracle, right?
That is, if something that we do is done little better, I mean, we are able to admire it. And I, as you rightly said, the Lord does this so that we can feel kinship with him. Otherwise, I think other than awe and possibly fear, it's not possible to have love, because to feel love, we have to feel kinship. And that is what Swami did. That is what Krishna is doing. In fact, such was the bonding of the Gopalas with Krishna, that on those rare occasions when Mother Yashoda would feel separation from Krishna, you know, she would feel, what is this boy? He goes off early in the morning, before sunrise he sets out, he comes back only after sunset. I don't get him at all. So some days she would tell Krishna, no, you don't go today. Today you stay at home. And that is how it would be, that Krishna would not be going out for grazing the cattle. And those days the Gopalas would become miserable. You know, they would be a miserable lot. Not just the Gopalas, even the cows, the calves. Apparently nobody would feel like doing anything that day. That is how the contrast was when Krishna was present and not present. So that is the kind of bonding they developed, the kinship they developed, because Krishna did these little things with so much of love and beauty. And you know, it also appears as though Krishna would purposely plan some of these days when he would not go out, because it would depend on which asura was coming to kill him and where his presence was needed. So sometimes he would bunk going out for these pastures so that he can stay at home and take care of a demon here, asura there. Or some days he will convince Mother Yashoda that he has to go, because as we had discussed before also, you know, Bakasura came as a big crane and he tried to gobble up the cows and the cowherds. Krishna tore apart the beak of this Bakasura. Hearing of the death of Bakasura, his brother Aghasura, Agha means a python, he came to kill again the Gopalas and the cows. A huge python with the mouth open, the Gopalas mistake it for a cave and they walk into the cave, not realizing that Aghasura is going to shut his mouth and swallow all of them. That is when Krishna runs to the entrance of the so-called cave and expands in size so much that the python just suffocates and dies, because its mouth is again ripped apart, just like it happened to Bakasura, the brother. So Krishna also would do this. You know, it's not just Yashoda wanting, it was all part. You just realize that everything is part of Krishna's master plan. And it is so beautiful because it makes us realize that even in our life, whatever we see happening is part of Swami's master plan. Some things are sweet, some things are lovely, some things evoke devotion. While on the other hand, some other things are not so nice. They are even sometimes ugly. They make us feel bad. They make us feel sad. But I think we should take a step back, recollect and remember that everything is part of His master plan. And therefore, though it appears ugly, though it appears like a python at this time, though it appears like it's going to swallow away our cows at this point in time, let us remember that this is also a leela of the Lord. And once it is done with, we will be able to look back and enjoy this leela. So I think that is a feeling that is necessary for us to cultivate if we wish to truly surrender to the Lord.
And again, you know, that is the role of these miracles, and that is the role of whatever we, I mean, even in a normal satsang, when you're speaking about Swami, when we say that Swami cured this person of this disease, or this person was involved in an accident like this, and they, you know, so many incidents where the person escapes without even a scratch on the spectacles that he's wearing. The reason why these stories are related is to reassure us that, you know, if we get into any problem, it can be dealt with. There's nothing that it cannot be dealt with, and you know, that probably must have been one of the reasons why these asuras came in so many shapes and forms. Otherwise, we might think that, okay, these are the only things that can be dealt with, right?
Problems do come right in all sizes and shapes and forms.
Right. And, you know, oh, if the asura had come like one of the calves, Krishna wouldn't have been able to notice. Also, there's one asura who comes like that. Or if an asura had come who was a flying asura, probably Krishna couldn't have handled it. Or if he was underwater, Krishna couldn't have dealt with it. I think everything is covered so that, you know, to assure us that if you have any problem, we will not probably face any of these asuras, but any problem we might face in life, it can be dealt with. You're surrendering to a master who can deal with all of these issues. As they would say that, you know, what a opportunity it is to find a God who is worth surrendering to, and what a waste it is to not surrender to a master after having found him. And you know, these are the assurances that Krishna gives. Again, probably if you look at it, I think Sanjay Sani sir used to tell in some of his talks, he said, you know, had Krishna wanted to kill these asuras, or had Rama wanted to do away with Ravana, just a mere will was enough. But he had to put up this whole drama so that, you know, even the drama becomes part of the leela. As you said, you would say that this is just a leela and you just wait for it to get over, to look back and say that, oh, that was a nice experience. And I think that is the whole play, because all these different shapes and sizes come to show you that, you know, just like how they, when they market a product, they say, well, you can throw it from this height, you can immerse it in water, you can do this with it, but still it will not break. Krishna's assurance was like that. You know, problem may come like this, problem may come in the form of that person, in the form of this scenario, but Krishna will protect you.
I remember once, you know, when there was this person who was suffering and he was diagnosed to have tuberculosis and he had to battle it.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, he came out successfully. So he was saying, you know, I am feeling very low to inspire. And I narrated to him one or two incidents of Swami's, you know, cancer cancelled. And his doubt was that he said, see, cancer is okay, but this is tuberculosis, you know. So do you have any, like, you know, tuberculosis miracles? When you were speaking about problems coming in different shapes and sizes, this is what I was thinking. You know, okay, Swami can do tuberculosis and cancer, okay, but what about thyroid problems, you know? Does God's miracle, you know, I think that is the reason why Swami brings, or God brings on so much of variety, just to show that, yes, all sorts of problems in all shapes, all sizes, every kind, whether it is big or small, everything I have got the medicine for. You don't have to fear. Why fear when I am here? And this assurance that Swami would tell, why fear when I am here, that is the kind of assurance Krishna also would give. Because you don't have to worry. That is what he would tell the Gopalas, be it asuras in the form of these animals, be it the snake Kaliya who had, you know, poisoned the entire lake so much so that fumes would come from the lake. It reminds us of one of these Belandur lake or something in Bangalore where you go close by and you die. They say that is, that poisonous the fumes are. So in those days of no industrial pollution, also the lake was like that because of the snake. And so Krishna solved that problem. Everything, you know, beat the might of Lord Indra himself. You know, interestingly, we had narrated this, the Govardhana Giri episode, but Swami beautifully writes, you know, from a much larger perspective in the Bhagavata Vaini, saying that it is not as if Indra was arrogant. Indra just played his part to show the world the glory of the Lord. So it is not as if Indra was arrogant. It is not as if Swami writes there. It is not as if Indra seeks people to worship him. And Swami also writes, it's not as if Krishna goes and stops people from worshipping. Krishna will never say, you don't worship this person, don't worship this person, worship only this person. And we can so much relate to that because Swami also never did that. Swami also never told us, you should worship Ganesha, you should worship Shiva, you should worship me. Nothing. Absolute freedom Swami gave. Because that is what God is, absolute freedom. So that is what Swami writes in the Bhagavata Vahini as well, that even when it came to the might of Indra, the Gopalas could trust in Krishna. They knew that they need not fear when he is here. But clarifying in that episode, Swami says that it's not as if Indra was arrogant. It was just everybody playing their roles in the drama to make the message more impactful and beautiful. When we look at movies, inspiring movies, when we look at inspiring dramas, all of them have a message in the end. If only that message was given to us as a concentrated pill, possibly we would not enjoy taking it. But if that same pill is crushed and made into a delicacy, a delicious dish, either a sweet dish or a salty dish which is cooked well and given, we'll be receiving the medicine at the same time enjoying a feast. And that is what the divine drama is all about. So when the Lord is conferring these messages, he is doing it through these leelas so that the process of learning also becomes very beautiful and memorable.
Absolutely. I think that is the background of Bhagavatam itself. Because here is Vyasa who has written the 18 Puranas, who has categorized the Vedas and Vedantas and Upanishads. And he says, can I simplify it even further? Because the categorization of Vedas itself was a process of simplification.
Mm.
It was all over the place and, you know, he kind of streamlined the study of it and the passing on of it. So he said, can I simplify this wisdom of Vedanta even further? And that's how the Bhagavatam comes. And I think that is when he turns to the life of the avatar and says, after all, the avatar has actually done that. He has played out in his life whatever Vedanta speaks of. And I mean, personally for us, when we first did the Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam, when we, in the 1990 Samukos discourses, it was primarily about Vedantic messages. Swami was quoting from Vedanta and all that. But even as we were going through that, we could recollect so many incidents in Swami's life and so many interactions that we had as students, which was nothing but playing out of these messages. When Swami would say, you're not the body, when Swami would say, you have to control the senses. For everything, we could relate one episode or one incident where Swami was actually very beautifully and through a small incident, Swami
living out the message.
Literally lived it out for us to absorb it. So when you say that it's a pill which is, you know, probably put into a feast and we don't even realize that we have ingested the medicine, that's what the Bhagavatam is. And it is not only something which is, you know, something which is concentrated, if you are going to put it in a dilute form, you would think that you need more time to consume it. But even when there is less time, that is what the pretext of the Bhagavatam is. Even when Parikshit had only 7 days, this was still the most potent way to absorb that knowledge.
I remember when we started the Bhagavata Vahini Satsang, we began with an analogy that Swami gives in the Bhagavata Vahini itself, saying that the Bhagavatam is an endless ocean. The waves keep coming one after another. It only depends when you start counting the waves and you stop it. And you say this is the Bhagavata Parayanam. So if you count only 5 waves, yes, that is also the Bhagavatam. You count 5,000 waves, that is the Bhagavatam. You count a 5,000,000 waves, it is the Bhagavatam, but it is not complete. It goes on and on and on. For Parikshit, the Bhagavatam was 7 days because that's all he had time. And for us, again, you know, the Bhagavatam is coming to a close because we have decided to stick to the Bhagavata Vahini. So I think in a few more sessions of Bhagavata Vahini, this book, Bhagavata Vahini, which again is possibly the beginning where we started counting the wave and ending, is going to come to a completion. We are in the last few chapters of the book, wherein actually, you know, Parikshit offers gratitude. You know, once again, we hear Parikshit talking about the curse that was given to him by Sringi. And he remembers Sringi with gratitude, and he tells Shukamuni, Shukamaharshi, that I'm so grateful that he put this curse on me, because of which I've been able to dive deep into this Bhagavatam and listen to such beautiful things, which I already feel I'm liberated, you know. It is so sweet and so beautiful that it even removes the desire for liberation from you. That is the nature of the Bhagavatam. So he says that please don't stop, just keep continuing. Because I know that the moment of death is possibly approaching. I don't know when exactly. Let it approach. I just want to keep listening to Krishna's glory more and more and more. And that is so heartening for us to read, because it shows that the stories of the Lord are so beautiful and mesmerizing that they take the sting even out of the ultimate fear that we have in life, which is death.
And I think that is probably the greatest sign of a devotee, and that is what Parikshit life shows. That when you're able to look at an adversity in life and say that I'm thankful for this because I'm going to learn from this, I'm going to go closer to God from this. I think that is what Mother Kunti said. That's what Parikshit says. And I think that's what every devotee says. And that's, I think, a lesson for all of us. Because definitely we're going to have a lot of problems in life. Nobody is going to escape that.
Correct.
But the greatest blessing that Swami can give is not the solution to the problem, but to look at that problem and say that this is a blessing.
This is not a problem. Hmm.
This is what is going to take me close to Swami. This is what is going to give me the opportunity to practice surrender. This is what is going to give me the opportunity to think of Swami more. I think that is the opportunity which each one of us have. Because as I said, there is going to be no lack of adversities and problems in each one of our life. As Swami says, the human birth is going to be filled with that. There is no
a pleasure
one,
is an interval between two pains.
Absolutely. Even the avatar's life is not an exception to that. So when we are going through that life, as we are going through all of these stories, there is no problem which is too big for him to solve. There is no problem which is so negative that you cannot find Swami in. All that we have to do is we have to have the will to look for him in that, and with the prayer to find him, we have to look for him.
On that note, dear listeners, we would like to bring today's afternoon satsang to a close. We hope you enjoyed in Krishna's Bala Leelas just as we enjoyed them. You can, as always, write to us at listener@radiosai.org with your thoughts, your feelings, your feedback, anything at all. We will conclude now with a song, on the other side of which you will be greeted by Brother Chandu in his segment Love to Love. So, till next week, it is goodbye and Sai Ram from the afternoon satsang team.
Krishna nevo, nee varalame mandaramu.
Nee divyatma swarupule memo, ma prema atma swarupam nevo.
Nee divyatma Radio Sai Thursday Live. Radio.